So all the wasted words. Anyway, so I wanted to use the book of Esther as a text which actually gives an example of politicization of religion. And this is why, because the story of Esther, most of the times when we analyze it, we focus on Esther as somebody who God chose to bring salvation to her people. And most of the times we don't think in terms of who really benefited from the process. First, for me, I think what moves me is the fact that actually in Mordecai and his people believed that sex before marriage was not acceptable in their teaching, and also that rape was not acceptable. But the book of Esther, the process of choosing the new queen involved her spending a night with the king in his bedroom. And most of the times we don't critique that, but always we think in terms of, you know, in religious understanding of God choosing her to intervene for the people. And in this case, Mordecai uses religion to achieve something not just for himself. Of course, he was the main beneficiary, but also to benefit so many other people. But I don't know at the end of the day whether we question whether it was the choice of Esther to go through that. So in Nigeria, every time when you deal with the context of Nigeria, you have to accept that Nigeria defines itself as a very religious country. Very religious. Religion permeates, in the words of Mbiti, John Mbiti, religion in Nigeria permeates every realm of life. Okay? So you cannot separate religion from culture in Nigeria. And yet, religion is right at the frontier of the justification for most of the atrocities that happen in the country. So a group of 14 of us went to Nigeria, and we were oriented to understand some of the things about Nigeria, positive and negative. The fact that this is a country that produces oil, and it has so many other resources. It's one of the countries that is rich in culture. There is one saying that always speaks to me that was actually originated from Nigeria. It's the saying that unless lions can tell their story, the story about their hunt will always glorify the hunter. That saying is from Nigeria, and the feminists have taken it to use it to talk about the fact that the telling of the story is always contextual, you have to always look at the power relations of who is telling the story and who is benefiting from that angle of telling of the story. So that's also the question of when we also read the scripture, we always ask questions about who is reading it, in what particular way, and for whose benefit. And the interpretation of religion in Nigeria is also in the context where you have to always have hermeneutics of suspicion in interpreting who is using religion and for what. So we were oriented, and we visited, if you can say, we landed in Abuja, and then we visited Abuja later on the last day. But the first day we landed, we moved to Kaduna. So we were in Kaduna, we are Abuja, Kaduna, and then we moved to Plateau Estate. And then we moved to Adamawa. Okay? So we had this real pilgrimage of going to different places. And we met different groups of people, especially women. This was our team. Some of the people came, joined later after this photo was taken. But we had representatives from different countries. We had Julia is from Georgia. Elaine, you know. Leah, her name I think is Leah, she's from Nigeria. And then Ifasia Harrison is from Liberia. And Selene is from Nigeria. She was representing people with disabilities. And Cornelia is from Bread for the World. And then the other sister next to me, I've forgotten her name, I'm sorry. And then the Rainbow Nation. And then there was, yeah, that's another sister I've forgotten from Nigeria. And then we have Rebecca Dali, who later on, we visited her center, and I will talk more about that. And then we have Yusuf, the General Secretary of the National Council of Churches in Nigeria. We have Les More up there from Nigeria, but he was working in Kenya at one point. And then we have Father Basilio from South Sudan. We visited several, we had audience with several people, and we listened to stories within different groups. And some of them are listed here. EYN, National Mosque, Executive Secretary, Christian Association of Nigeria, the President, Cardinal of the Roman Catholic Church, Cardinal John, Lutheran Church of Christ in Nigeria. We had even the LWF president with us at one point. We visited three internally displaced people's camps. Liom is a camp which was created ad hoc by the people themselves when they were displaced by the, I don't know, so many of us hear about Boko Haram, but we don't hear about the conflict created by the headsmen. There is a headsmen conflict in Plateau State, where the headsmen go into communities and they want to feed their cattle, and because certain things have changed, but I think we have our sister who can talk to that more if there's time. But because certain things has changed, there were times when in the construction of communities, it was mandatory that if you had a farm, you had to have a corridor in between so that those who are headsmen with their cattle could pass. And many communities don't observe that anymore. And it causes a lot of problems because headsmen still pass through these farms and they destroy crops. And then it becomes a conflict. They can attack communities and all that. And then the other, so the Riom camp was actually created. It was an old abandoned shopping center. And the people just came, moved from their community where there was violence. They just moved and settled there. And it's a very pathetic place because one room, a small bedroom, there are three or five, even up to five families in one room. Then the other one is Fufori. Fufori is a camp which was created by the government, but it's not monitored. It's not there. There is no system that has been put in place. People find their own survival. The best camp was St. Theresia. Sorry for the spelling. It was a Roman Catholic church camp, and well-maintained programs and schools and all the access. And many people run from other camps when they hear about this to come to this, but then they cannot accommodate everyone. Okay, so then we visited a Center for Caring, Empowerment and Peace Initiative that was started by Rebecca Daly. And then we had several town hall meetings. And then we also visited some of the organizations that are providing responses, like the UN Women, UNHCR, UNICEF, UNFPA, and others. And then we also carried the voice of the women to the politicians and traditional leaders, so as to advocate for the things that women were saying. This was one of the town hall meetings. So what were the stories of women? Before I say or I share one of the stories that I want to share, I wanted to say that actually this pilgrimage, we were following this process of celebrating the gift via positiva, visiting the wounds via negativa, and seeking transformation via transformativa. So what are the gifts that women are? We were focusing on that, and what are their wounds? And then what is happening to transform that? So I want to tell you one story that we have. This is one of very typical stories among those people who, the women especially, who had escaped from Boko Haram. So when we went to the Center of Caring and Empowerment and Peace Initiatives, Rebecca Daly's center, this is the woman who shared this story. She said she was 6 months in marriage when she was abducted by Boko Haram. She stayed with Chiboko girls for almost 6 months before she was sold to another group. She became a slave for the wives of Boko Haram men for 1 year. The views of Boko Haram men became uncomfortable. The wives of Boko Haram became uncomfortable because they thought she was being favored by their husband. So because of that, she was a committed Christian. She started really asking for God's guidance as what to do. And amidst that seeking of God's guidance, she thought God was saying she should marry a Muslim man. It would be a better solution for her. So she married one of the Boko Haram men. And when she was fasting and praying, because it was really like she feared she would be killed. But as she was doing that, one incident happened, and that husband she had was killed. And because there was so much confusion, she managed to escape. But when she came back, she was able to identify her grandfather, because where they were put was very far from their families, and most of them could not even be traced. So she was somebody helped her to identify where her grandfather was, and then throughout the process of restoration, she was brought back, but the family refused to take her back. The husband couldn't take her back, and her family couldn't, because of the stigma surrounding the experience she went through. And so instead, she heard about this center of caring by Rebecca, and she was enlisted, taken for that. And so we met her at this center where so many other women shared the story. And what was very moving for most of us is that most of these stories that we heard were really, it was not just one woman. It was so many women who had similar stories. They had witnessed the killing of their husbands, of their family members, and they had been raped or abducted and raped, and when they escaped, they were not accepted back. There was so much stigma. And actually for us to hear these stories about rape, we had to ask several questions. Most of the times they would just talk about the general violence, but not go to those stories of rape because of the same stigma. And we also heard so many stories about those people, the women who survived, who were raped, that they were, actually we had to ask several other questions for them to come to a point where they could talk about their fear of being HIV infected. And we discovered that there were so many initiatives to respond to this, but to the violence itself. But there weren't many organized initiatives that were responding particularly to the trauma of these women who have gone through sexual violence and the fear that they were carrying about whether they were HIV positive or not. There were not many initiatives. As usual, we also discovered that the initiatives that were there, some of them were almost what you would think opportunistic initiatives, where this is where is money and let's do something about it. And they were not sustainable, those kind of initiatives. One of the initiatives that we really found very helpful was this Center for Caring and Empowerment and Peace Initiatives by Rebecca Dalley. Rebecca Dalley, I think I showed her in one of the pictures. Rebecca Dalley is one of the women in Nigeria who went through a scholarship which was offered by the Ecumenical Movement, and Nyambura can talk to that because she was one of the facilitators. And after her studies, she came back to, she was in Nigeria where she decided that she was going to do something. She's a member of EYN, which is the Brethren, Church of the Brethren. And the Church of the Brethren is one of the churches that actually was really very much has been affected by this violence, in that most of their headquarters had to be moved because it was right in the place where there was a lot of violence. So they moved, and so many of their members were impacted. So Rebecca was one of the women who was once abducted herself, but by God's grace, she was able to escape, because by the time they abducted her, it was the time when she had already started responding to the women who were coming back. And one of the abductors said to the other, said, oh, no, 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 we can't do anything to this woman because she helps, whether you are a Muslim or Christian, she helps everyone. She helps our sisters. So that's how she escaped. But so this center, what it does is it gathers the women who have been rescued from this kind of experience, and then they empower them, they care for them, they provide psychosocial support, and then they also train them in different skills so that they can be able to survive, to have a decent livelihood. So we listened to so many stories, and I think this center, while it does all they could or all they can, it's not enough because the need is just so big. Most of us hear only of the was it the number was 300 of the Chiboku girls who were abducted? That's the number that we know. But actually there are thousands of these girls and women. There are thousands and thousands, and most of the times we don't even hear about them. So the response that is given, however good it is, it's not enough. So I am sharing this because I think there are so many things that we can think about as a church community. There are so many things that we can explore in how we can help in a situation like this. And I have questions which I wanted to end with in this presentation. There are so many gaps, as I've said. So how can we help? Because one, there is the question of changing the attitudes. Violence and politicization of religion is something that actually the Boko Haram, whatever they do, they use religion, that they are doing it for religion. And the politicians, when they respond like the Muslim communities that we met and leaders we met, they were blaming the Boko Haram they are not practicing Muslims. They are not. And yet, when you look at the response of the government, you discover that in the parts where it's majority Christians, there isn't much that the government is doing, because the leadership is mainly Islamic. And the parts where it's mainly Islamic, there are a lot of initiatives. So we went to the part where it's mainly Christian context, so the response is so bad. So what can we do? There is silence and stigma and normalization of sexual and gender-based violence. Because of the stigma, many people don't want to talk about it, but many people also want to pretend that it's okay. There is silence and stigma around HIV as a second layer after the sexual gender-based violence, because you have to ask so many questions to get to HIV, while you have to ask several questions also to get to questions of sexual gender. What can we do about that? The rejection of sexually violated women and girls. Dismantling the attitudes that put value on human beings, you know, who is really human? So, I mean, these are questions that we have to think about, because even when we think about media reporting, we discover that actually there can be so much reporting about so many things, but these girls and women, we don't hear much about them, because are they not as human as we are? Joint education, okay. So most of the education initiatives, even government initiatives, are separate. They separate the Muslim children from the Christian children. So we discovered that actually each will teach the West about the other religion. And really, you know, in keeping the memory of anger and hatred through education, what can we do to dismantle that? And then, do we have resources to help train communities in community-based trauma accompaniment and healing? Do we have resources like psychotherapists to volunteer and accompany sexually violated? Community mobilization for resources to share with existing initiatives like CC, EPI. And how can we create forums where we can bring our religious leaders together? Because there is NIREC, is Nigeria Inter-Religious Council, which has not been meeting because they want the government to put money into it, and the government is not interested. And therefore, even though both the Christian Association of Nigeria and the Nigerian Supreme Council of Islamic Affairs have a lot of resources. They will not use that for this initiative. What can we do? I want to end there.